Hello and welcome to Minding Your Mind, all about your mind, how it works, mental health, mental illness. With me is Professor Ian Hickey, psychiatrist and co-director of the Brain and Mind Centre at the University of Sydney. So imagine you're a professional golfer standing on the green about to take a putt. You've done it thousands of times before, often under enormous pressure, and you're good at it. But this time, suddenly, you forget how to do it. How do you putt the ball toward the hole? What is normally a smooth, practiced action is now a mystery. What do? You stand there for ages and tentatively pull your putter back and tap the ball and it falls short. Then you try again and you miss again. This is the yips. It's affected thousands of amateur and professional golfers, some of the best in the world. Sometimes for weeks, sometimes months, sometimes years. One study found that at some stage, the yips affects between a third and a half of all golfers. Sam Snead, one of the greatest golfers of all time, said he suffered from the yips on and off for 55 years. He said, you get to the point where your mind can't figure out how hard to hit the ball. In gymnastics, there's a similar thing called the twisties, which you might have heard Simone Biles talking about at the Olympics. It's a sudden loss of ability to control your body in the air. You lose a sense of where you are. It must be terrifying. It forced her to withdraw from an Olympic event. A similar thing can happen in cricket with spin bowlers when they can't release the ball. In baseball, when good fielders and pitchers lose the ability to throw the ball accurately. Can happen in trampolining, in tennis, with serving. The yips seem to occur when there's an opportunity to stop and think before you act. You stop before you putt, before you start a gymnastics event, before you serve in tennis. In sports that are more free-flowing, like all the football codes, it doesn't seem to happen. You don't see a footy player forget how to kick the ball or throw a pass. So what is going on with the yips and what can we learn about our brain from them? Is it pressure, a loss of confidence? Is the brain thinking too much when it should just shut up and get out of the way? And how do you fix them? Ian, what's going on with the yips?
So, James, you just hit a nail on the head. Is most people think it's anxiety, right? They think it's anxiousness. Oh, my God, the Masters is going to depend on whether I get this 6-inch putt or not. And it stops. And for many, many years, been thought of as a form of anxiety just interfering with life and that anxious people would get it. Not really great people, not sort of professional sportsmen you're talking about. But actually, you got to go back and think about how does motor movement, continuous motor movements, actually happen. So in the bottom of your brain is a really complicated bit of circuitry, the so-called basal ganglia. These are nuclei that are running back from the bottom of your brain back to your cerebellum, that's at the back of your head, which coordinates complex motor movements, sends signals down your spinal cord to all those muscles to do complicated things. Riding a bike, walking. I don't know if you walked up the stairs this morning, James, but I did.
I did.
Good. Hopefully you didn't think about it. Hopefully you didn't have to think about it. You just know how to walk upstairs. If you stood at the bottom of the stairs and thought about how do I walk upstairs and think about it, you might have to stop and think. Don't stop and think.
Right.
Don't stop and think. So the classic thing that you'd understand if you've ever seen someone with Parkinson's disease, which is actually a disease where the nerve cells into the basal ganglia, which release dopamine, are actually affected and they're losing their normal chemical input. People can't start activities. So people with Parkinson's disease, when they're stopped, they're stopped. They can't start. Now, don't do this. Don't do this, okay? Not at home. But if you push them, right? If you push people with Parkinson's disease and they start walking, they can keep walking. They can actually then do things. And if you actually get on YouTube, see people with severe Parkinson's disease who can ride bikes, right? They can't walk. They can't do anything. They can't hold a cup. But they can ride a bike. Once they're in the continuous motor movement, those circuits that have been well worn out, like for walking, riding a bike if you're a kid, continue in those particular ways. So the yips affects particularly those sports where the ball isn't moving, where you have to initiate the activity, as you said, like putting in golf being the classic. But pitching, I didn't know about the one about spin bowlers, but that's really fascinating as well. You've got to actually generate the activity, to start the activity.
Or like in gymnastics, you've got to start the run-up or start your routine.
Yeah. Imagine thinking about doing that triple somersault in the pike position and landing on your feet. don't think about it. You've just somehow got to have done it 10,000 times. And when you do it, you do it. So these continuous motor movements have their own memory, their own circuitry.
Here's a good example. Have you ever tried to teach someone how to tie your shoelace or tie a tie? I can do either of those things without thinking about them at all, but I can't teach anyone. I don't know what I do. I just do it. Is it a bit like that?
Yes. In fact, many of these things are best done. If you ever want your kid to be a famous, whatever that was, gymnast, golfer, tennis player, for God's sake, put the little racket or the ball in when they're young before they think about it. And they just develop the natural movement that goes with it and they complete the movement from start to finish. So what happens in a Parkinson's-like way is that that process of initiating it, so when people say, I can't remember what to do, well, you don't remember how to do it anyway. You've done it 1,000 times. You don't want to think about it. If you thought about it, you wouldn't know how to do it. In fact, you wouldn't know what the complex motor machinery was that allows continuous smooth movement. If you think about it, if you just flex your arms backwards and forwards and contract a muscle and whatever else, you'll see that's one simple movement. Imagine turning all those movements into continuous smooth movements, as we do when we walk, as we do when we speak, as we do when we play any of these particular sports. So it's basically an interruption of those smooth pathways. Now, you can't give it a good talking to. You can't talk to that machinery. It's not listening. It's actually just does it. It has learnt to do it. So what becomes fascinating for sports people who've been really good at it, et cetera, is well, in what circumstances does it go wrong? Having learnt this thing, having mastered this thing, does it actually happen? So there are two sorts of sets of issues. One is that it appears to become more common as you age. Don't you hate how things become more common as you age? You know? So things like Parkinson's disease actually become more common as you age. Some of this motor machinery, some of the circuitry that underpins this stuff seems more prone to having these blips or yips or breaks or being unable to initiate the thing. Also having degrees of muscle spasm, so the muscle stays contracted, so-called dystonias, etc., rather than being continuously relaxing and contracting in smooth movements that are required to coordinate this whole set of activities. So often, as golfers age, as pitchers age, as other people age, these things interfere with it, so they become somewhat more common. Then, of course, once it happens, people do get anxious about it, actually. They get anxious about, oh, God, when's it going to happen? Middle of the tournament, you know, when I'm halfway through that somersault, what's going to happen if I forget? Where am I going to land? On my head, you know. So the anxiety around initiating the activity and completing the activity then goes up. Then anxiety does start to interfere with these motor pathways. Greg Norman should have never thought about golf. Tiger Woods should have never thought about golf. Greg Norman should have had no thoughts going up the 18th hole of the Masters tournament in Augusta. Should have had no thoughts. Once you start to have thoughts, actually, and anxiety about those thoughts, then that actually makes the initiation of these movements more difficult. And, of course, every time it goes wrong, oh my God, it's going to happen again. I don't know when it's going to happen.
Yes.
In fact, you don't know when it's going to happen, which is even worse.
Given what you've just said, I'm interested why it seems confined, as far as I can think, to sporting activities. I mean, why doesn't it happen tying a tie or tying your shoelace or walking up the stairs or doing the washing up or cleaning our teeth, those other movements that feel like they've become instinctive? Like if I couldn't tie my shoelace, there are some, you know, you might say there's no stakes there, but they kind of are, because then I can't leave the house and I'm going to be late for my meeting, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, James, as you age, you might find some of those things are not so simple. Now, brushing your teeth's not quite the same. That's just a repetitive, you know, particular kind of thing. But the tying the shoelace one, or tying a tie, so often as people do age, they do actually suddenly, as they would say, they wouldn't call it the yips, they say they sort of forgot how to do some things that they'd known how to do their whole life. And then, of course, they think about it and think, well, I don't think how to do it. I've just always done it in particular ways. So you do see in other things, in playing musical instruments, in other particular areas, people can start to develop the same thing for the same repetitive, in a sense, what should be normally a mindless movement. You shouldn't have to think about it. You should have done it so many times and it's so repetitive. So what you do see, in example, I was giving like Parkinson's disease earlier on, people can't do a whole lot of things. They can't initiate a whole lot of activities they would have done, although once they've initiated them, sometimes they can then see them through to completion. So it's particularly for complex motor activities, there's an initiation, as you said, you have, there's a stop bit. You know, this is why different sports, in fact, the point you raise is a very good one. I don't think footballers think anyway, but they don't have to think about it. They're on the move. They throw the ball hits them, you know, or the player hits them for rugby league players. You know, there's no thought involved. That's good. They just can do those sets of activities over and over again. The ones where they have to think about it, now think about, for example, shooting for goal to win the test match, you know, blah, 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 after the siren's already blown, as has happened several times recently, not so simple. But a lot of sports psychology, of course, is tied up about this. Don't think about it, okay? Just like on the practice field, like you've done 1,000 times before, you know, putting the actual context out of your head and just allowing your body to do what it's done on the practice field 10,000 times. And actually make sure you have the same movement. You don't try and actually change it. You don't try and think about it. You just try and complete the activity in exactly the same way as you've always done.
Before we go on, I should mention there is a great American novel by a guy called Chad Harbach, H-A-R-B-A-C-H, called The Art of Fielding. I interviewed him about 10 years ago. It's a wonderful novel about all sorts of things, but one of the central characters does, in fact, get the baseball yips and derails his career because he can't let go of the ball from shortstop and throw it to first base, and that is a thing. So your advice is very sensible as always, don't think, but hard to do. Like Sam Snead, who's ranked by some as the third best golfer of all time, he said he had it on for 55, he had the yips for 55 years. How do you take that very simple advice and actually make it happen if you are suffering from some form of yips? You're there on the green, don't think. And yet you are thinking about not thinking and you are thinking even more.
So there's two bits here. One is, in a sense, what happens at the initiation, the activity, the one you said, I can't even remember what to do. So then people just do really bizarre things, you know.
Yeah.
Bang the ball 6 feet past the hole. Others are kind of interruption, like muscle spasms and things during the actual event. So the event itself gets disrupted. So usually what happens is you've got to go and go, okay, this motor pathway somehow or other has got corrupted. Just think of it like computers. You know when you've got the computer, you've got to shut it down. You know, something's happened. Mm. It's gone off on its own. Actually, I think computers get the yips, basically. You know that stuff that happens, a little wheel of death comes up on your computer. What do? Shut it down. It's having a bad day. We don't know what it's done down there, but the circuitry's gone off. Well, in some ways, part of the answer to some of these things is exactly the same. You have to shut it down and start again. But actually then people learn to do it differently. They create a new motor pathway, okay? So rather than that pathway that somehow has become corrupted, the thing they've been doing for 20 years, so people will change their grip. They'll change their swing. They'll learn something new. So they're initiating a new motor pathway. This is like changing the software, okay? Like whatever's wrong with that, we're patching it.
Right.
We're learning a new one. We're gonna do it differently, all right? So it's not going to be the same movement as it was before. So a lot of
which is what a lot of golfers have done. They've actually, you know, those long broomstick putters that you put under your chin, they've tried that or they've done something to do it differently.
So they then created an entire new motor memory. They've gone and put their hands in a different place. They've put their eyes in a different place. I don't know what they've done with their feet, but they've done something different and the whole swing then is different. So in fact, not only does the yips thing affect putting, but golfers. Golf's a terrible game. Ball doesn't move. Everything's done and initiated by the golfer. So golfers in the middle of their things, you know, these really famous golfers have to go and reconstruct their swing, sometimes because they've ruined their back and whatever else. But a lot of it's got to do with actually they've lost the rhythm, in fact, of the movement. So they've got to go learn a new motor pathway that then is smooth and effective and they don't think about it in particular kinds of ways. So that's one aspect is new motor learning of what it is that you previously did, but different. And in a sense, if you like, it's a new software. It's using the same old hardware, I'm afraid to say, but it's a new software package. It's a new movement. Like when we learn any new movement, for those of us who might try to learn new movements at a certain age, it ain't that easy, but you can learn to do new things. I've got a tennis coach who's trying to teach me to serve differently, to bob. Don't know how to bob. You know, to knee bend and do this and hit slices. I can't hit the ball very hard anymore. But it's actually really interesting, actually, learning to do something that you did before differently and new.
Yeah.
And hopefully what you do is think about it a few times and then hopefully don't think about it, you know, actually. Mm. And you've got a new motor pathway, which is then not going to be affected or less likely to be affected by the same problem. Now, the other second bit is if you have got very anxious about it, okay, so this is where the psychological bit comes in. If you have got very anxious about it, then this is the sports psychology kind of bit, is that anxiety makes all of this worse. So you've got to tell yourself, got a new way of doing the thing. You have to learn what we talk about a lot on this particular program, anxiety reduction techniques. You have to get into the mindlessness or the mindfulness, depending on how you look at it, but the mental state of relative relaxation that then lets the motor pathway do what it wants to do. So that is the, you know, sports psychology bit of the whole world doesn't depend on it. My whole world's not going to end if I miss the putt. I'm just going to walk up there and hit the ball like I hit the ball 1,000 times on the practice screen, and I'm going to do whatever I'm going to do. And I'm engaging exactly the same activity in a low arousal state. And then
that's interesting.
Hopefully let the motor pathway do what it does on the practice screen, and it's done on the practice court 1,000 times before.
I would say I'm a tennis player too, and my level of play consistently over the last 40 years since I learned tennis, when I'm playing a game, is at least 20 to 30% less than when I'm just hitting with someone. So I feel that I have the yips as soon as I start playing a game, because even though we're playing for nothing and it doesn't matter at all, I'm concerned about, I guess, playing my best and winning and thinking about, you know, the importance of the shot, whereas hitting up, it doesn't matter. So I reckon I suffer low, whereas in touch football, where you don't have any time to think, my play isn't good, but it's the same level whether we're kind of practicing or we're playing.
Yeah, so unfortunately, performance anxiety, it's a problem. You know, when it matters, then there are contingencies. Yeah. There are, of course, consequences. Golfers do lose the Masters. People do lose Wimbledon. You know, stuff happens. Yes. Then, in fact, the classic of anxiety interfering with performance. And then what we're talking about is anxiety actually interfering. So this is the frontal cortex. This is the brain bit. This is the thinking bit. Mm. Going and putting its hand in where it shouldn't, down there in the motor machinery. It should get its hand out of there. Get his thoughts out of there and let the motor machinery do what it does.
Exactly.
So, you know, this is the really tricky bit.
But you can engage with that, can't you?
Yes.
You can say, all right, we just had a good hit up. Gee, I hit some good topspin backhands down the line. This is a game, but actually it's a hit up. We're not paying for $100,000. Which would be harder to do if you actually were playing for $100,000. But we're not playing for – I don't even have to buy the beer if I lose, because that's not how we play. So this is a hit up and it's fun. You can sort of give yourself those messages. I would imagine they could become a little bit counterproductive if you do it too much, but you can try, I suppose.
No, but you can see in the middle of – and if you watch tournaments, you can see in the middle of things. That's exactly what people need to do. You can see some people in watching Wimbledon or watching US Open, whatever. They go to the side of the court. They sit down. And they try to do exactly that. They try and de-stress the situation. Yeah. They go back to that lower arousal state. You know, and in many sports, what people refer to as being in the zone, you know, in the zone. They're not thinking about that thing. They're not thinking about the crowd. They're not thinking about the cheering. They're trying to go back to the more pure state of just letting the motor activity run that they have so perfected over many, many times. You see this, of course, with musicians and other people, you know, same sort of thing. They need to disappear into the external world out, let the internal motor run its smooth, continuous movement. And, of course, all these people, unlike us, James, they're very skilled at it. The rest of us struggle a bit with these things. Mm-hmm. But your point's a very good one. And it is interesting, even for your casual weekend, others, blah, 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 blah. As a tennis coach said to me the other day, just let it be a bit loose, Ian. Just loosen up. Let it be a bit loose. Racket loose in the hand, loose the thing. Just hit the ball. You know, don't you hate it when a coach just says that? Just hit the ball. Mm. You know. But of course, that's in a motor way what we do. If you think about what we do every day of the week, I don't think about how to speak, as some people have noticed. I just speak. You know, we don't think about how to breathe. We don't think about how to run. We don't think about how to walk, because we don't have to think about it. we've created all those motor pathways that just automatically do those things in a smooth way as long as they're intact. And these are bits where the thinking brain has many much more important things to do. It shouldn't go messing with these internal bits. But of course...
You know, I'm terrified now that when we finish this, I'll get up and I won't be able to remember how to walk out of the room.
Just imagine, this is what... So you can imagine for people, for example, with Parkinson's disease and other motor diseases, that's exactly what happens. They develop terrible anxiety and there are other biochemical and contributing functions to depression in these areas and slowness. All the things all your life that you could just do, suddenly you can't. And there's a disconnect between the mental bit. And you can see this on brain scanning. The mental bit of the brain saying, now, move now, please. Time to move now. And the bottom bit of the brain isn't responding. Doesn't work anymore. Software's off. The wheel of death spinning in the computer down the bottom. It's not happening. And the frustration and the other side of the coin, just to get one, is when that motor machinery also goes wrong, it can do things on its own. So-called motor tics or unexplained sudden movements. So people we've seen with other diseases like Huntington's chorea and other areas where people suddenly their arm throws out. Or in things like Tourette's syndrome, people say stuff, words we wouldn't possibly say on this particular podcast. But, you know, vocalizations. So tics are the same motor machinery not just not doing something, but suddenly explosively or doing something completely involuntary. I didn't mean to say that. I didn't mean my arm to throw out in this particular way. So this motor machinery, when it goes wrong, can go in both directions. Can't do something, but also doing stuff on its own, doing involuntary stuff on its own.
Let's talk a little bit about tics, because I would imagine most people have met someone or who've had some sort of a tic and noticed it, or perhaps had one themselves. Some of them are, you know, touching your face or doing something with your hand, or some people blink a little bit more.
A lot. Eye blinking, big one. Big eye blinking.
The frequency of it, but also they blink a bit more, I don't know, is the word forcefully or adamantly than they need to. So is that a nervous thing? Is that
it's the same? No, it's the same motor machine. See, everyone thinks it's anxiety. Well, just stop that. Yeah. Just stop blinking. When it affects the voice box, you get these vocalizations. And other words sometimes come out, but it can be a coughing sound, it can be other sort of particular things. You can see it in other muscle spasms and muscle twitches. We're talking about tics, muscle twitches in various ways in other parts of the body, where it's actually the brain bits, the same brain machinery, sending out actual signals to do stuff randomly. And it can be quite complex kind of movements, so not just one sort of spasm or one sort of jolt or one sort of particular thing, but it can be complex motor movements. So suddenly your arm starts doing stuff that shouldn't really be doing, or other parts of you start doing things, and so you get these unusual writhing movements or other sets of movements where those same bits are off on their own journey separately. When the motor machinery falls apart, as I was saying, for example, in Huntington's disease and other forms of chorea, abnormal movements in various ways. But vocalization and tics are much more commonly seen in kids. And so when they're developing brain, and sometimes when the brain development goes wrong, you see these sort of motor tics, and sometimes they then become less obvious as kids grow up. They don't always. Unfortunately, some of them persist in very abnormal ways. And of course, people just assume that they're under voluntary control. When you see that stuff, you just assume the person meant to do that, say that in some particular way. But it ain't. It's that motor machinery at the bottom of the brain off on its own trip.
So what do you do about that if you've got one of those?
Well, again, that becomes really kind of complicated then as to what options in terms of sort of training, physiotherapy type things, trying to retrain to not do those things, but also where the machinery is seriously disturbed, then people get into what sort of chemical influences may actually affect those areas. So in things like Parkinson's disease, putting more dopamine in, which has been taken out, which is a kind of lubricant for the whole machinery of movement. In other areas involved, when you've got too much of that stuff going on, you might need to see about blocking some of those chemical messages so it doesn't go off on its own trip in various ways. Pretty tricky territory. Interestingly, there's an overlap between all these motor abnormal movements and something we do talk about, and we've talked about elsewhere, obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD, which is in many ways a disorder of thought of the same kind of machinery. So there are some of the drugs that are used in those particular areas, the serotonin reuptake inhibitors in particular, which actually might also be useful in these areas. And there's a lot of experimental work going on using other compounds that affect these same basal ganglia, that affect these same motor nuclei at the base of the brain, that coordinate all this stuff to try and do it. And then going one step further, in Parkinson's disease and other areas, people are using brain stimulation techniques, putting little electrodes down there, trying to turn it off and on, which is fascinating if you've right. seen that, deep brain stimulation for Parkinson's disease. And you can see people turn on and off by turning electrical signals on and off in these deep motor nuclei. So this has become quite a common treatment, for, particularly for the severe tremor associated with Parkinson's disease, deep brain stimulation. So, you know, it's kind of like pretty interesting machinery at the bottom of the brain, and people trying to work out ways chemically, physically, through electrical stimuli, and otherwise, in addition to psychologically or through physiotherapy, and we'll say physiotherapy, sort of motor movements, learning to sort of relearn motor movements. Now, for the YIPS people, I don't suggest deep brain stimulation as the immediate treatment, but there are other relearning techniques trying to actually deal with these particular sorts of problems.
What about Tourette's? Is that something separate, or is that some a severe case of tics?
Yes. So Tourette's syndrome, you know, that involuntary swearing, saying really bad words, which is mainly often just sort of coughs and other things, people coughing all the time, and it's a vocalization problem. It is the motor machinery controlled by the brain around the voice box making those particular things. And then, unfortunately, crossing right over into swear words and other sentences that people really can't control. So it's actually got the same basis, but it's affecting different parts of the musculature, particularly vocalizations and the sounds that we particularly kind of make and the words that we kind of make in the same way, which has been terrible for people who have it, because people just assume they're badly behaved people who swear a lot or other sets of issues. Mm. And really, we are so interesting. We just assume people should be able to get this under voluntary control. They should be able to give themselves a good talking to and stop it in a particular kind of way. No. So Tourette's is another variation on these same conditions that affect these different nuclei, these different collections of brain cells and their coordination in particular ways. But unfortunately, in that situation, particularly affecting vocalizations, words that you say involuntarily
and
in the wrong place.
And the same... And treated in the same way as you've previously described.
Yeah, yeah. So, and you see, of course, just take another variation on all this, of course, is stuttering. If you think about stuttering, you know, it's motor speech where the normal flow is actually interfered with. Now, stuttering is really interesting because the behavioral treatments, and I say this at a moment because we have one at the moment, world famous, Joe Biden, President of the United States, famously affected by stuttering, but he has learned something I haven't learned. He has learnt to speak slowly and to use continuous words. So you keep the movement smooth and you do it in a way that allows you to keep the movement. So you think it like Parkinson's disease is the problem with starting and then stopping in the middle. But if you – so this is like people with Parkinson's disease riding a bike. If you can just keep moving at approximately the same pace and learn to do that without becoming anxious – now, people think he's slow Joe, you know, and they also, at times, he does have difficulty because at times he does get stuck. And it appears like he's lost the particular thing, but he hasn't. He's actually sticking to, well, I don't know, he may have forgotten the old thing by now. He's not quite as young as he used to be.
Yeah, you
know? And exactly. I think at his age, you're allowed to forget some stuff. Like, who was that past president? I can't remember him. You know, like, you know, you're allowed to forget some of the stuff and... maybe the name of the Australian Prime Minister or whatever, I don't know, whatever stuff you'd never really learnt in the first place. I mean, and we do change Prime Ministers a lot, you know.
We do.
But he's learnt a very important behavioural principle, which is the continuous but controlled speed over time to continuously have that motor movement moving so he can keep talking at a regular pace and not get stuck.
Which brings us back to golf, where that is impossible. You cannot do that. You hit the ball, then you walk to the ball. But what might help putting that principle you've just described into action is, and you see rugby league goal kickers do that, from the moment they know that they've got to take a kick for goal, they go into a ritual routine. So it's all about the point, the millisecond at which their foot makes contact with the ball and whether they kick it in the right direction. But from the moment they get the ball, setting the ball down, their run up, few pre-rituals. You always see them talking to themselves, saying a few key words before before they start their run-up. So it seems to me what they're trying to do is take a very specific movement, a kick or like a putt, and actually turn it into a long flowing process.
Correct. For those who can remember, I don't remember it, but Johnny Wilkinson stealing the World Cup rugby from Australia with that totally weird routine he went through every time he kicked the ball, and every time he kicked the ball, it went through the posts. And a very interesting sort of guy, actually, very anxious sort of guy, very odd guy off the field, but he had it down pat. It's exactly the way you said, James. The whole weird routine started almost a minute before he kicked the ball in a weird set of motor movements. So that by the time he kicked the ball, the bit in the middle, kicking the ball, was a smooth motor movement that was never interfered with. I say this because if you've seen things go wrong, for those who might have seen recent test matches, a certain South African walk up and just kick the ball and kick the goal. Very unusual. Nearly all goal kickers around the world now actually do exactly what you're talking about because they don't want to miss the critical one. So they do the whole sequence in a long, drawn-out way. So golfers could do that. The average golf game would turn into about 6 hours instead of 4 hours at this point, for every putt. And you do see, golfers do this because every putt is different in a particular way. But those who rush it and those who've got routines, you see this very much in tennis players who've got all sorts of odd routines these days before they serve for exactly the same reason. If you can draw the whole sequence out in that particular way you just described, then the bit in the middle where you actually hit the ball isn't the start of the activity. It's in the middle of the activity. And hopefully you're in that whole sequence then that doesn't get disrupted. And hopefully you don't think about it. You just hit the ball as part of that whole sequence.
Yeah, well, it seems to me a benefit of that would be the vital moment when you hit the ball, whether it be a golf ball or a footy, is instead of that being the moment, you turn that into step 15 in the process. And so it kind of, in your mind, makes that little part of it less significant and allows you to just smooth the whole process and the pressure, I suppose, of the process out over a longer period.
It does. And you can see, I mean, goal kicking in rugby sports is a great example of this. If you watch it, the people who are really great at it, they've stopped thinking about it 30 seconds before they kick the ball, right? They have actually, everyone on the sidelines, win the game, lose the test match, whatever else. They've stopped. They've actually engaged in that whole routine. By the time they get around to kicking the ball, I mean, we've all gone to sleep. They've taken so long to get there. But it is in the middle of the sequence. And so the anxiety, the whatever it's about, whatever's at stake, they're into that particular. Now, this is a kind of interesting, as we were discussing before, is it a mindfulness or mindlessness? It's actually being in the moment of the particular thing, being detached from all the other contingencies, which otherwise active minds are thinking about all the time, and disappearing into just the activity. So mindfulness itself as a relaxation technique, of course, does exactly that. Cuts out the external world and just disappears into the minutiae of whatever it is you're currently doing. In this case, I'm going to call it mindlessness. You know, you want to just disappear into the moment of the motor activity in that sequence that you've done 1,000 times. So it doesn't matter whether the whole test match, whether your whole career, whether the Masters in golf depends on it, you're just going to engage in the whole continuous long activity.
And it is amazing what we can do when we do that. Back when I used to do stand-up comedy, I used to spend like days just sitting at my desk trying to think of jokes, and after 2 or 3 hours just hating myself because I come up with nothing. And then sometimes on stage would get into, not all the time, but sometimes get into that state where I just make up all these jokes on the spot. And then I come off and I think, how did that happen? Like I spent 3 hours yesterday and got nothing. And then in 30 seconds, 5 bits of gold just spurted out. So it's the same brain, isn't it? It's just getting it into the stage where it can operate as at its best.
Yeah, so being in the zone, for all those who are in the zone and do these particular kind of things, you have to have done, I'm afraid to say, lots and lots of practice, right? This is not a shortcut without practice. You have to have actually done all that stuff a lot. But when you're on, which is
all the frustrating bits.
Yeah, all the frustrating bits. You have to be able to disappear into that bit where you, in a mindless way, you can just be in it. And in the pure activity can emerge. And it's really fascinating, of course, as to why, with any sports, why people are so fabulously good on one day and not so good on the next or the day after or whatever. Their own performance varies. But You see this, and golf's another good example. You think, why are they out in the practice fairway again? Why are they hitting the ball 45 more times before they tee off? They've hit those balls 10,000 times. Well, they got to get into the motor zone. They got to get into the same kind of sequence so that when they walk up to the first tee, it don't matter. It's the same thing that I've done and the same routine, and doesn't matter if it's the British Open. It doesn't matter if my whole life depends on it. I'm just doing the same thing. So it's a really good example, actually, of for everyday life, you know, can we disappear into activities that allow us to be, if you like, relaxed, to be in the zone and not so distracted by the contingencies of everything or the context of everything that we can't enjoy the pleasure of it. We can't actually be in those things that we can actually have mastery over. So it's a kind of wider lesson here, you know, Zen and the art of putting on golf courses and, you know, Zen and the art of motorcycle maintenance. Because when people disappear into physical activities, when they're doing these things, they often have quite different thought patterns. So here's another one for another time. If you want to have really creative thoughts and other thoughts, go do one of these things where you disappear from responding to the external world, and people do stuff because they've gone into a different kind of mental state, a different kind of relaxed, detached kind of way, and have other sorts of thoughts. And a bit like you were saying, James, about the spontaneity of humor, and people say this about art and other areas, they need to go into those kind of mental states to be freer, to kind of think in different kinds of ways. And you can go scan people's brains doing this. It's kind of really interesting that people can be extremely active, but in a different way, more focused on their own internal world than the constantly what our brains are doing most of the time, which is monitoring the external world for what's going to bite us next or hit us next or run us over next, you know, that we normally react to.
And of course, that's not just useful for people who might be engaged in some sort of, in inverted commas, creative activity. If you're running a business or you have any sort of job and you're grappling with something, those same principles apply. You know, you're in a meeting, you're at work trying to work out this new strategy and you don't know what to do, and then you go and do something else, and halfway through, you know, a bike ride, you think, oh, of course, and you pull over and, you know, leave yourself a voice memo or scribble it on a bit of paper.
Exactly. Now, this is a really important point because it happens when you're asleep too. Your brain's doing stuff a lot of the time, and you thinking about it is just interfering, okay? Just let it do what it's actually good at. And particularly for another time, as we get older, it'll come up with the answer. It just may take a little while. Just let it go about its business in many ways. Probably a good point to, in our general comments, don't overthink it.
Don't overthink it. That's probably a good place to end, isn't it? Don't overthink. Think, but don't overthink. Well, that was very interesting, I found. I hope the golfers listening found it useful. If you've got any questions or comments or want to suggest further topics, send us an email at mindingyourmind2@gmail.com. That's mindingyourmindnumeral2@gmail.com. And Minding Your Mind is supported by Future Generation Global and the generous philanthropic donations from families who support ongoing research into youth mental health. Further help is available, of course, from Headspace, Beyond Blue, Head to Health, and Lifeline. You can just Google them or call Lifeline on 131114. Don't forget how to use your phone. The book I mentioned was The Art of Fielding by Chad Harbach, H-A-R-B-A-C-H. Really great novel and got a great case study of the baseball yips. Talk to you next time.